But before we do all of that, I've got two other guests here. They are the singer, Barb Younger, who's been a guest on this show a few times. We usually talk to her about Leonard Cohen or Bob Dylan, but she's got a new album out called Barb Younger and John McDaniel Perform the Beatles, Come Together. And we've also got Joyce Morgan, who's the author of Martin Sharp, His Life and Times, writer and journalist Joyce Morgan. Joyce, you are like me, from Liverpool, but unlike me, you've still got the accent. Can we talk about what you remember of Sgt. Pepper the first time you heard it?
I remember feeling confused, first of all, when I saw the album, because I was confused by, who is this Sgt. Pepper? I know who the Beatles are, but who's this Lonely Hearts Club Band? Are the Beatles playing with them? But then when I heard it, it sounded, on the one hand, kind of familiar with a slight vaudeville feel, but utterly unlike anything I'd ever heard before, with some of the other sounds, the sort of more psychedelic sounds and some of the instruments, the Indian influence in the George Harrison track. So it was both familiar and utterly strange.
So as a child growing up in Liverpool, you've been following the Beatles. I mean, how would you not?
I absolutely had. I mean, I'd grown up around them, well, not literally around them, but with their music from my primary school days. And, you know, I was familiar with all their pop songs. And so this was like such a different sound to the Beatles. This was so utterly unlike Please Please Me or Love Me Do and the cute sort of mop top things. They were suddenly transformed into these psychedelic Technicolor figures. And that's obvious from the album cover. And then when you start to listen to it, from the music itself.
We'll talk about the cover in a moment. But Barb, maybe I can ask you, you were down the road in Stockport. Tell us about your first impressions of Sgt. Pepper the first time you heard it.
To me, it felt like it was absolutely in sync with the time. Do you know, it just felt like we discovered caftans and we were discovering bell-bottom trousers, and because we were a bit behind in Stockport, do you know? And it all felt as though it felt kind of cohesive with that time. It felt as though the doors that opened in that year, which opened not just for the Beatles, because of course we can't talk about Sgt. Pepper's without talking about Pet Sounds, that all of those doors were opening simultaneously, and that time in, of course, to Summer of Love and all of that. And so for me, it kind of came as a parcel with everything in it. And I was interested in all of it. I was interested in Indian mythology and Indian philosophy. And I think I even went to a yoga class. And I was interested in the whole referencing of really traditional music hall. So in a funny kind of way, it felt cohesive to me.
Let's mention this famous cover, because it is one of the most famous album covers ever. I'll ask you about it, Joyce, because you've written this book about Martin Sharp. I mean, there's a connection here, isn't there? I mean, this Australian artist was in England at the time and knew the Beatles and had designed the cover for, or was about to design the cover for Disraeli Gears, the Cream album. So he was very much part and parcel of this whole, I don't know, zeitgeist, I suppose, is the word.
Yeah, very much. I mean, he was at that time sharing a flat initially with Robert Whittaker, who was the Beatles photographer who worked for Brian Epstein, the manager. And he then shared a flat with Eric Clapton, and George Harrison used to come round and they'd have jam sessions in that in their studio in Chelsea together. And so there was that connection as well. There was also, like, visually, the cover of Sgt. Pepper's is a collage by an artist called Pete Blake. The images of cutouts of all sorts of characters from the past, from pop culture. There's everybody on there from, there's Elvis Presley, Laurel and Hardy, Diana Dawes, a very busty blonde actress of the time.
And Marilyn Monroe.
And Marilyn Monroe.
On whom Diana Dawes based herself.
That's right.
True to say. Exactly. But also Karl Marx and...
And Karl Stockhausen.
And Karl-Heinz Stockhausen is there as well, who Paul McCartney was getting very interested in his electronic music at the time.
Yeah. The background to the cover was that Pete Blake actually asked the Beatles to come up with images or people, a list of names of people that they would like to see on the cover album. I mean, you know, people who were influential to them. John, Paul and George all came up with various figures. John, I presume, came up with the more political figures. George came up with a lot of gurus, a lot of Indian gurus. Ringo didn't come up with anyone at all. You know, he was, you know, much more laid back and it was, well, whatever. So they assembled all this group of figures. There was a couple of figures they wanted in there who weren't, who I think the record company overruled them. They actually wanted Gandhi and they wanted Adolf Hitler in there, but they weren't allowed in there. So there was a few who were overruled. It was an album cover that had that incredible impact because it showed, in a way, the two variations of the Beatles, because on the left side of the album, there were the sort of more familiar Beatles. They were wax dummies from Madame Tussauds, actually, but they
which is how the Beatles are supposed to look.
To look, yeah. And then in the middle, they're in these Technicolor military uniforms. And so at first you went, well, which is the real Beatles here? And then, of course, you open it up and you had the four figures in, again, in those military satin psychedelic uniforms. And then there was a curious thing inside the album itself, because it was, first of all, a gatefold, which was pretty unusual then. It was certainly the first gatefold I'd ever seen, even though it wasn't the first one to appear. But inside that gatefold sleeve, there was like a cardboard sheet of cutouts. So there was a cutout of a moustache, a droopy moustache, and the Beatles, as Sergeant Peppers, they were wearing those, they'd grown droopy moustaches. There were some Sergeant Pepper's army little stripes, and I think there was a little cutout badge. So it was almost, it had the feel of like something that you might pull out of a cornflake packet, you know, a little toy that you could cut out.
And you could cut out the moustache and you could stick it up your nose.
You could stick it up your nose, and I suspect I did, actually. So it was just like nothing else. And then on the back of the cover, there were the lyrics in very tiny print. So you could, you know, very quickly...
On a bright red background.
Yeah, a little hard to read, getting harder by the day. But it just seemed to have the whole goods. And somehow that cover was so in sync with the feel of the music. It was just the perfect, perfect cover.
You're listening to The Music Show on RN. We're talking about Sgt. Pepper today. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band is 50 years old. And Barb Younger, we've talked in the past about singing Dylan's songs, about singing Leonard Cohen's. But the Beatles are a different matter, aren't they? Because, I mean, we associate the Beatles songs so much with the sound of their voices. I mean, lots of people have sung Dylan songs. Actually, very few people have covered the Beatles. Does that make it harder from your point of view?
I don't think that's true, actually. I mean, I think some of the most extraordinary versions of the Beatles songs are by other people. There's, you know, of course, help from my friends.
Yes.
Joe Cocker is the really obvious one.
Yes.
And I think, actually, they're not dissimilar, because people have a very particular reference to things. So the same goes for Dylan and the same goes for Cohen. The Beatles was harder for me because I didn't grow up with Dylan and Cohen in the same way, whereas I did grow up with the Beatles in the way that Joyce did. It was my youth and they were part of the landscape of my youth, and it's very hard to work with that material. But when I worked with John McDaniel, he was the person who opened the door for me, because of course he's American and he didn't grow up with them. And so his response to them is, as a musician, without the weight that every musician in Britain who grew up with them carries, which is so particular that it's very difficult to approach the music.
Yes. Well, we're going to listen to you sing, and we're going to listen to... There's only one Sgt. Pepper song on the album, and that's the one we're going to listen to, which is Getting Better. Say something about Getting Better.
Well, it's such an interesting song, and of course it comes from the heart of somebody who understands domestic violence. And so you see in the lyric, and I thought, how great to sing that as a woman, and how great to sing, and when I do it live, I do it, you know, in the sort of male persona, as it were. And it's so interesting. It's such an interesting song to be inside of, because you do completely get the logic of it, and you get the sense of the way that because we're pre-feminism, of course, at this point, but we are in the sexual revolution. And so things are beginning to tap on the door of people's, particularly awake people. And Lenin was politically waking up in a big way. And suddenly Lenin's kind of grasping that these things are, oh, you can change. And how do you change? And I think that's an incredibly exciting thing. And as you know, we tagged it with Here, There and Everywhere, which to me was as kind of an answer to It's Getting Better, where suddenly this man who's been guilty of domestic violence finds himself in a place where he realizes that to be complete, he needs to find the other in himself. That's the kind of reading of it.
And it's interesting that although it's a Paul McCartney song, it's not exclusively a McCartney song. It is, as you suggest, almost written from the point of view of John Lennon, and he contributes that line to it in the middle of Paul McCartney's I have to admit it's getting better, is it couldn't get no worse, which is Lennon's line. Thank you very much indeed, Barb. Thank you very much, Joyce.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much.
I used to be cruel to my woman. I beat her and kept her apart from the things that she loved. Man, I was mean, but I'm changing that scene, and I'm doing the best that I can. I admit it's getting better, a little better all the time. Can't get much worse. I admit it's getting better.